offensive language. Your discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news article, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Well, welcome to a Thursday, everybody. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com, the Progressive Voices Network, and a bunch of other places, too. Welcome to the show. And if you tuned in for the pre-show music, you heard a bunch of songs about lying. And today's pre-show music is dedicated to the president. Yes, Donald Trump is at it again. Either he's lying, or everybody who's spoken on the record in the last 2 days has been lying. He just contradicted them and himself in this interview with Lester Holt that's going to be on NBC Nightly News tonight. So they only released a short snippet of it. The interview was conducted this afternoon. And, oh boy, they get right into it. The first part of the clip they show is Donald Trump talking about James Comey, you know, the guy he praised so often beginning in October after Comey, you know, had the press conference about Hillary Clinton, you know, the guy who he said is doing such a great job. Yeah, well, this is what Donald Trump said about Comey to Lester Holt this afternoon.
He's a showboat. He's a grandstander. Ooh. The FBI has been in turmoil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
Not everybody.
You take a look at the FBI a year ago. It was in virtual turmoil less than a year ago. It hasn't recovered from that.
Monday, you met with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein.
Right.
Did you ask for
Stein.
A recommendation?
Rosenstein.
What I did is I was going to fire Comey. My decision. It was not.
You had made the decision before they came in the room.
I was going to fire Comey. There's no good time to do it, by the way.
Because in your letter you said I accepted their recommendation.
Yeah, well,
so
you
had already made the decision.
I was going to fire regardless of recommendation.
He was going to fire regardless.
He made a recommendation. He's highly respected. Very good guy. Very smart guy. The Democrats like him. The Republicans like him. He made a recommendation. But regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey.
Uh-oh. So he's saying Rosenstein, regardless of what Rosenstein said, he was going to fire Comey. And actually, that is the truth. But the line that he sent his people out, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders and the rest of the talking heads out there in the White House to say was that he went off of the recommendation made by Rod Rosenstein. That has to do with that, you know, that Comey was so mean to Hillary Clinton, and that was the reason. And then he goes on with Lester and says this. Let's first debunk the first part where he said, you know, the FBI has been a mess. He lost the confidence of the people around him. Today, while, you know, Dump was talking with Lester, there was a hearing going on at the Senate Intelligence Committee. And it was Andrew McCabe, who's the acting FBI director, in the hot seat answering questions. So Senator Heinrich of, I believe, of New Mexico asked this question.
We've heard in the news that claims that Director Comey had lost the confidence of rank and file FBI employees. You've been there for 21 years. In your opinion,
years.
Is it accurate that the rank and file no longer supported Director Comey?
Nope.
What?
No, sir.
Ooh.
That is not accurate.
Uh-oh.
I can tell you, sir, that I worked very, very closely with Director Comey from the moment he started at the FBI. I was his executive assistant director of national security at that time. I then worked for him running the Washington field office. And, of course, I've served as deputy for the last year. I can tell you that I hold Director Comey in the absolute highest regard. I have the highest respect for his considerable abilities and his integrity. And it has been the greatest privilege and honor of my professional life to work with him.
Whoa.
I can tell you also
this guy's gonna
that
be fired.
Director Comey enjoyed broad support,
you think,
within the FBI, and still does to this day. We are a large organization. We are 36,500 people across this country, across this globe.
We are women. Hear us roar.
We have a diversity of opinions about many things.
Mm-hmm.
But I can confidently tell you that the majority, the vast majority of FBI employees enjoyed a deep and positive connection to Director Comey.
Okay, so that
thank you for your candor.
Thank you. That directly contradicts what Dump said in the first part, right there again.
He's a showboat,
right?
He's a grandstander.
Yeah.
The FBI has been in turmoil. You know that.
No,
I know that.
No,
everybody knows
we don't
that.
Know that.
You take a look at the FBI a year ago, it was in virtual turmoil.
So Donald Trump just makes up his own facts and he changes like that. So the story up until today was that, Rod Rosenstein comes in. He's just confirmed as the deputy attorney general. Of course, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, had to recuse himself from all things having to do with the Russia investigation. Yeah, right. Like that happened. And so it was up to Rod Rosenstein to come in. And what we were led to believe is that of his own volition, Mr. Rosenstein just came up with this 3-page memo talking about how James Comey needed to be fired because he was just so mean to Hillary Clinton. And he was a showboater, right? He was a grandstander until Lester asked Donald about it today.
Let me ask you about your termination letter to Mr. Comey.
Yes,
right. I greatly appreciate you informing me on 3 separate occasions that I am not under investigation.
And you know what? I got to stop it right here. First of all, it's a termination letter. The letter is you're fired. Your services are no longer needed. We wish you the best in your future endeavors, which is how every letter that firing someone ends. It was impersonal. It was ridiculous. It was wrong. But that's how Dump decided to fire James Comey. And but in the middle, he sticks in this paragraph.
Even though you told me on 3 separate occasions,
I'm not in the voice right now. I wasn't intending on doing my Donald impersonation, and so I need to get in character for it. So I'm not quite there yet. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Even though you told me 3 times that I wasn't under investigation, I decided to fire you anyway. This just shows what a fucking narcissist the man is. Who puts that in the middle of a firing letter? It's not, everything is not about you, Dump. But I digress. Sorry. Back to the question. Oh, wrong mess.
Let me ask you about your termination letter to Mr. Comey. You write, I greatly appreciate you informing me on 3 separate occasions that I am not under investigation. Why did you put that in there?
Because he told me that. I mean, he told me
he
that.
He told you weren't under investigation
investigation? I've heard that from others. I think.
Was it in a phone call? Did you meet face to face?
I had a dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner because he wanted to stay on. We had a very nice dinner at the White House.
He wanted to stay on?
A dinner was arranged.
It's a 10-year
I think he
term.
Asked for the dinner. And he wanted to stay on as the FBI head. And I said, I'll, consider. We'll see what happens. But we had a very nice dinner. And at that time, he told me, you are not under investigation, which I knew anyway.
That was one meeting. Right.
First of all, when you're under investigation, you're giving all sorts of documents and everything. I knew I wasn't under. And I heard it was stated at the committee, at some committee level, that I wasn't.
At some committee level?
So that didn't come directly
from
you.
Then, during the phone call, he said it. And then during another phone call, he said it. So he said it once at dinner, and then he said it twice during phone calls.
Did you call him?
In one case, I called him. In one case, he called me.
And did you ask, am I under investigation?
I actually asked him, yes. I said, if it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation.
But he's given
sure
sworn
he did.
Testimony that there is an ongoing investigation into the Trump campaign and possible collusion with the Russian government. You were the centerpiece of the Trump campaign.
Well, all
so was
I can
he
tell
being
you
truthful
is,
when
well,
he says
I know
you were under
that,
investigation?
I know that I'm not under investigation, me personally. I'm not talking about campaigns. I'm not talking about anything else. I'm not under investigation.
But so, by the way, many throughout the day since then, and that happened maybe a couple of hours ago, many former intelligence agents, members of the CIA or any others, have said, no, that doesn't happen. A target or potential target is not told if they're under investigation, is not told if they're not under investigation. The guy is a bold-faced liar. This man wouldn't know the truth if it came up and bit him on the ass. He just makes shit up as he goes along, and it is incredibly dangerous. Again, while that was going on, Donald Trump is sitting with Lester Holt for this interview, and we'll see more of it tonight on the NBC Nightly News. This hearing was going on in the Senate Intelligence Committee. Mark Warner is the ranking Democrat on the committee, and he asked Andrew McCabe, who is the acting FBI director, this.
Mr. McCabe, for as long as you are acting FBI director, do you commit to informing this committee of any effort to interfere with the FBI's ongoing investigation into links between Russia and the Trump campaign?
I absolutely do.
Thank you so much for that. I think in light of what's happened in the last 48 hours, it's critically important that we have that assurance. And I hope you'll relay, at least from me, to the extraordinary people who work at the FBI, that this committee supports them, supports their efforts, supports their professionalism, and supports their independence.
Now, a lot of, a lot of senators have asked if they would support an independent investigation and a special prosecutor, which is the calls are now coming faster, a number of them. Marco Rubio, of course, my senator down here in Florida, still won't go that far. Bill Nelson, who is the Democrat, sort of, is calling for it. All the Democrats are. Rubio, not so much. But that's why I called his office today, as you should, because it's important that we all really reach out to our Republican senators and representatives and reason with them. Say, we need somebody. Look, the way that Nixon was finally brought down was because Republicans went to him and said, it's over. You got to come clean. You got to leave. It's over. It's over. It's over. Sorry, I should never sing. I watched the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony last night, and, you know, ELO. Anyway, but Rubio did ask this.
Has the dismissal of Mr. Comey in any way impeded, interrupted, stopped, or negatively impacted any of the work, any investigation, or any ongoing projects at the Federal Bureau of Investigations?
As you know, Senator, the work of the men and women of the FBI continues despite any changes in circumstance, any decisions. So there has been no effort to impede our investigation to date. Quite simply put, sir, you cannot stop the men and women of the FBI from doing the right thing, protecting the American people and upholding the Constitution.
Truth, justice, and the American way. Well, they're reassuring answers for me from Andrew McCabe, the acting FBI director, but I can't help but think, listen to this. He told Mark Warner that he promised to alert the committee to any efforts to undermine the investigation. He said he promised he wouldn't update the White House what's going on. He went against what Dump said by saying that Comey had the respect and admiration of most of the people within the FBI, including him, McCabe himself. Obviously, McCabe is putting country ahead of party. I don't know what party he is. Putting country ahead of politics for sure, and doesn't seem to want the job. But then again, would you? So I'm watching the hearings. I finished What's News a little early today. I'll play that for you in just a moment, bringing you kind of up to date on all the craziness that's gone on in the last 48 hours. But then something odd happened, because it was just before 1 o'clock when there was a break in the questioning, and the chairman, Richard Burr, who has already come out and said he was really troubled by the firing, which is a good sign. And I just got to play this because I never got to it yesterday. This is Tweety, Chris Matthews, talking about Donald Trump firing the head of the FBI in the middle of an investigation into Trump's, well, into Russian interference in the 2016 election. And Tweety said,
a little whiff of fascism tonight, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely.
a little whiff of fascism tonight. Yes, more than a little whiff. In fact, God, it stinks. Maybe that's what Donald Trump is always sniffing. It's the stench of his fascism. Ugh, it's everywhere. Can't get rid of it. So anyway, a little before 1 o'clock, all of a sudden, Richard Burr, the chairman, said, well, that he and Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat, had to go for a meeting. It was an important meeting that they couldn't move. Right. And so that came just after I read a report in Politico that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. How difficult is it to get the pronunciation of the man's name right? Rosenstein, not Steen, but yeah, it's what?
Dr. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein,
you're putting me on.
No. It's pronounced Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
You must be Igor.
No, it's pronounced
Igor. Yes. I would have been using that all day, except they got the pronunciations backwards. It's Frankenstein, not Frankenstein. But in his case, it's Rosenstein, not Steen. And half of them get it wrong. Even Lester got it wrong in the interview. Oh, my God. Anyway, so there was a report that I had read that said Rod Rosenstein requested to meet with Mark Warner and Richard Burr. And so that meeting was set for 1 o'clock as this panel was holding this hearing, right? And so Richard Burr said, you guys keep doing your round of questioning and you can go on to another round of 5 minutes if we're not back. And sure enough, that is exactly where they went, was to meet with Rosenstein. Apparently, Rosenstein was very, very upset. He was upset because 'cause Dump was making him the fall guy, was making him putting the blame on him, because Sarah Huckabee Sanders, filling in for Sean Spicer, said that it was his memo, that three-page memo, that made, you know, Dump decide to take his advice, by the way, in those 3 pages, which I would have read for you, but it was really long and really dry, and it wasn't worth reading. But you know, he never implicitly said Comey should be fired. He just said his treatment of Hillary Clinton during the campaign was unfair and uncalled for and unprofessional. And you know what? I believe all of those things. But if that was the case, if Dump felt this way, he should have fired him immediately when he took office. But immediately when he took office is when Trump said, come here, give me a big hug. Not in so many words, but he did. In the first meeting in the White House, when he had everybody in whatever room that is, the green room or the library with a, you know, chainsaw, I don't know. There are so many inconsistencies with what this guy said that it's really, really sad. Anyway, so that was the meeting. I don't know what the outcome of the meeting was, but I guess we will soon find out. One other thing, so Trump in the interview with Lester Holt said, did I play the whole thing for you? I'm just so, I'm all over the place. I don't even know if I played the part where you know what? I'll play it again because it's mind blowing. So Lester Holt says, well, let me ask you about in the letter, you say that you met with him. I did play it. That on 3 separate occasions, Comey told you you weren't under investigation. So in that, Donald Trump is allegedly relaying parts of a private conversation that he had with the director of the FBI. So now that it's part of the public record, you know, Comey wouldn't be able to claim executive privilege in any testimony and not speak of what he did or didn't say to the president. Oh, this is just going to keep, the hits are going to keep on coming. So with that in mind, we'll take a break. We'll get what's news. Maybe we'll have time for a phone call or two before we get Howie Klein on the line. But more and more, there's a new Quinnipiac poll out that's showing this is going to impact the 2018 elections. Oh, boy. But unfortunately, we have to wait you know, a year and a half until the 2018 elections come. It's our job to make sure nobody forgets, because America has a very short memory. Oh, yeah. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The fallout from the president's firing of FBI Director James Comey is radiating in all directions as new reports surface. As the Oval Office occupant has attempted to lay the blame for the ouster on Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who'd been on the job just 2 weeks, the Washington Post cites a source close to the White House in reporting that Rosenstein threatened to resign because he was being made the scapegoat. At CNN, Jake Tapper says there were two reasons Trump dumped Comey.
A source close to former FBI Director James Comey tells me that there are two reasons why President Trump fired Comey. One, Comey's refusal to provide the president with any sort of assurance of personal loyalty. And two, the fact that the FBI's investigation into possible Trump team collusion with Russia in the 2016 election, that's still not only an active investigation, it's actually accelerating. As CNN just reported, federal prosecutors recently issued grand jury subpoenas to associates of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Now, the White House officially disagrees with this theory of what happened, but mounting evidence suggests that Comey was fired because of the president's irritation with the FBI's Russia investigation. Now, the White House officially points to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, fresh on the job, writing a memo expressing concern about the way Comey had handled the Hillary Clinton email investigation last year.
On Wednesday afternoon, in her audition to replace Sean Spicer as White House press secretary, while filling in for Spicer, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was still pointing the finger at the Rosenstein memo, citing Comey's alleged atrocities.
Having a letter like the one that he received and having that conversation that outlined the basic atrocities in circumventing the chain of command in the Department of Justice. When he saw that, he had to speak up on that action, and I think that was the final catalyst.
Oy, someone get that woman a history book and a dictionary, please.
Now, the word is Trump has been planning to fire Comey for at least a week, and he evidently asked Attorney General Jeff Sessions to come up with reasons to fire him. So that's why the Department of Justice is now the Department of Justification.
What we do know is that the president is doing what he does best, lie.
How many times can they just lie? We're on day 112 now. I mean, they give a reason, it's a complete light lie, and the next day they have to give a complete other reason.
The Senate reconvened on Wednesday for the first time since the firing, with the Democratic leader calling loudly for a special independent prosecutor.
If there was ever a time when circumstances warranted a special prosecutor, it is right now. Mr. Rosenstein already expressed concern that Director Comey damaged the integrity of the FBI. The Attorney General has already had to recuse himself from the investigation for being too close to the president. If Mr. Rosenstein is true to his word, that he believes this investigation must be, quote, fair, free, thorough, and politically independent, if he believes, as I do, that the American people must be able to have faith in the impartiality of this investigation, he must appoint a special prosecutor and get his investigation out of the hands of the FBI and far away from the heavy hand of this administration.
But of course, the Republican majority leader disagrees.
That's what we have now, Mr. President. Our Democratic colleagues complaining about the removal of an FBI director whom they themselves repeatedly and sharply criticized. That removal being done by a man, Rod Rosenstein.
That's Rosenstein.
Whom they repeatedly and effusively praised. When Mr. Rosenstein recommended Mr. Comey's removal for many of the very reasons that they consistently complained about.
And then he went on to reject the calls for a special prosecutor. While only a few Republicans in office have spoken out against the insanity, there are some GOP voices rising above the silence, like John McCain's senior campaign advisor from 2008. You know, the guy who gave us Sarah Palin, Steve Schmidt.
Well, it's unprecedented, shocking, actually, an enormous abuse of power by the president of the United States. Any Republican member of Congress who takes the president, his spokespeople's assertions that this action occurred because Director Comey was unfair to Hillary Clinton is either a fool or they have so lost sight in this era of tribal politics, their responsibilities to the country, that they've become faithless to their oaths. My old colleague, Mark Salter, Walker, the longtime chief of staff to Senator John McCain, may have hit the nail on the head today when he said, I never thought I'd be saying this in my lifetime, but perhaps we need a Democratic Congress to protect the national security of the United States in 2018.
You think? While we're talking national security, one must wonder what Dump is thinking. We are truly an opposite world. When I use Joe Scarborough to point out the absurdity of the Republican president not only inviting the Russian press into the Oval Office, but excluding the Americans.
This happened because Vladimir Putin asked Donald Trump if he would do it. And so Donald Trump barred American reporters, but let Russian reporters go in there with camera equipment that some people in the intel agencies tell me actually was dangerous to let Russian reporters go in with equipment of that kind yep. into the White House.
Yep.
What a bumbling, bumbling dope. I got the
If you appreciate these What's News segments, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. What's News and The Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener funded, and we need your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right. And to those of you who have become new subscribers, I thank you so much. You should be getting an email soon with the details on how to get the special bonus content. I'll be adding more bonus content as we go along. Again, the show will always be free because I know there are so many people who are still hurting. We are, since the Bush financial meltdown. Look, I lost my house in a short sale. This house, we're in foreclosure. So, I know that I can't afford to pay for a monthly podcast, but I know there are a lot of people who listen who can. And that's who I'm talking to. If you can afford it, I ask you, please, for your support. Before we get Howie Klein on the line, there was a bunch of stuff. There was so much going on. I talk about this every day. There is so much. And it's like I wake up in the morning. I walk here in my studio to try to put together what's news. And I pull sound clips and I listen to what's going on. And it's like a puzzle that I have to piece together to try to create a 6-minute narrative of what's going on. And while it's hard to find Republicans who are currently in Congress who are now calling for a special prosecutor, although there are a few, we'll talk with Howie Klein about it in just a moment, more and more Republicans who do not hold office are getting their courage up to go against this president and say, you know, there's something not quite right in the Oval Office. Like former Republican Congressman David Jolly from Florida. Listen to this.
This is an embarrassing time to be a Republican, and I've had local Republican mayors share that with me. It's no surprise that Donald Trump is governing with such arrogance and disregard for political norms.
Wow.
It is a surprise, though, that the GOP Congress is falling in line with the cover-up, and I think that's the angst you're seeing at these town halls. People are frustrated. Look, I'm a former member of Congress. For 8 years, we demanded accountability of Barack Obama, and the Republicans aren't doing it today, the current president. I would say to my former colleagues in Congress, Republicans, tonight, hold Donald Trump to the same standard of accountability that you held Barack Obama.
Come on,
you're not doing it.
Right?
You're destroying your credibility and you're embarrassing the party.
You think? I'd never thought I'd agree with David Jolly, but there you go. Then there's Maggie Haberman, one of the really good reporters at the New York Times, and going in line with today's theme.
There are several problems with this, and to be clear, this begins and ends with the president. Mm-hmm. However, this also loops before it begins and ends with him, through his staff, through what they say publicly, day by day. There is a corrosive dishonesty about some of what they have said since they came into office, certainly back during the campaign. We have yet to have a global crisis that is not of the president's making.
Can you imagine
where they're
going
to have to ask the American public to believe them? But all this does is completely undermine them. This reporting is pretty breathtaking. And you have to ask, at what point Are Republicans in Congress going to feel pressure to do something more than say, yes, we're concerned? The only person who's really saying anything new, Jason Chaffetz, is on his way out. He's not running for re-election.
Right, Jason Chaffetz, who showed up after his surgery that, you know, he had to leave Congress to have, even though it was from an old injury, go figure. He came in to vote on that horrific health care bill, or repeal, actually. But yeah, he's leaving. But he is calling for an inspector general investigation, not an independent counsel, but there are some. One more thing I want to play for. Well, you know what? I don't want to take time away from Howie. We'll get to it later or tomorrow. But now...
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. That's wash all. It all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. Oh. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, boy. Hi, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Good. I'm doing okay. Got to tell you, even though I still chuckle at that, and he is still Chucky Schmucky, he'll always be Chucky Schmucky, he's saying the right things as the Democratic leader in the Senate should. You know, he's been trying to come off as a little more progressive lately, isn't he?
I don't know if progressive is exactly the right word. Remember, it's going to be very important in the next year for us to keep our eye on the ball and remember that being anti-Trump right. isn't exactly the same thing as being progressive.
That is true.
And a lot of people are mixing those up, and they're two separate things. So, yes, Schumer is turning out to be a pretty decent anti-Trump fighter, but when it comes to the nitty-gritty of politics that inside of the Democratic Party, he's not someone that you want to trust or count on in any way on anything. Remember, there's nobody in the history of the United States of America other than people who have run for president. So there's no one else who has gotten as much money from Wall Street as Chuck Schumer. They're not giving him tens of millions of dollars to, you know, be Mr. Progressive.
Right.
He's a bad guy.
Right.
Yes, he's fighting Trump, and he deserves our thanks and credit for that. There are a lot of Democrats who are doing that. I mean, I talk to them every day. I'll talk to a Democratic candidate running for Congress who will just want to talk about Trump. And when I try to ask him how he feels about single payer, he'll just freak out. You know, doesn't want to talk about it.
Ooh.
Rather talk about how much he loves the NRA.
Ooh.
So you got to be careful.
Yes.
I don't mean you, Nicole.
Right.
I mean people in general have to be careful not to mix up anti-Trump sentiment, which is necessary, with progressive. It's not the same thing.
Or even mix up being good. Sally Yates, who was so great on the stand on, was it just Monday, I think she testified? She was so great. And then I go on Twitter and I see people going, Sally Yates, 2020. It's like, no, you don't know who she is or what she was great on in the hearing. But one thing has nothing to do with the other. So
exactly right. Now, on the other hand, Sally Yates for governor of Georgia,
uh-huh.
That sounds pretty decent.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be a reasonable expectation. Maybe. We don't know. I've heard a lot of good stuff about Sally Yates, but it's all from people who really like her and admire her.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But let's find out more about Sally Yates. Right now, I'm inclined to think that she would make a really awesome gubernatorial candidate for the state of Georgia.
Do we know if she's even interested in running for office?
It depends who you hear it from. She hasn't said a word about it. Some people say she is, and some people say that she's not. I don't know yet. I mean, that's the honest answer.
Right.
I just don't know.
You know, the other thing of what you were talking about, Howie, about when you talk to candidates and people who don't know, we have new listeners to the show every day. And so I should reintroduce you, Howie Klein, in addition to being the man behind downwithtyranny.com and blogging there. And it's a blog you should bookmark and read every day because there's tons of info there. Howie is the man behind the Blue America PAC, along with Digby and John Amato of Crooks and Liars. But you do the vetting. You talk to potential candidates, and you vet them to find the most progressive potential candidates and help them become candidates, help them raise money or raise money for them. But the goal is to find the true progressives. It's not enough to be a Democrat. It's not enough to have a D next to your name. Because if we learn, there's a lot of people with D's next to their name who are anything but progressive. So you really do the vetting. You question them. You get to know them. And only the ones that you discover are the real progressives, do they get the Blue America endorsements?
That's right. I mean, and generally speaking, not everyone agrees with this approach, because people could say, well, no matter how bad a Democrat is, they're going to be better than a Republican. And, there's some truth to that. It's not completely true. But there's only been one time when we've ever found, a Democratic candidate in the general election who is actually worse than the Republican. That's rare that mm-hmm. ever happens. But it actually, and the Republican wasn't fantastic. It wasn't like some great, great Republican, but the Democrat was so bad that the Republican was actually slightly better. The Republican who's kind of slightly anti-choice, the Democrat was like violently anti-choice.
Wow.
Just as an example.
Right.
The Republican was very much live and let live in terms of LGBT community. I wouldn't call him pro-gay necessarily, but he's definitely not anti-gay. Whereas the Democrat, a vicious, horrid, hate-filled homophobe who literally hates gay people.
Wow.
But even on those issues, that's one thing. But then, and it's very rare that you find a Republican who's worse on choice than a Democrat. But in this case, this was a race up in Michigan. But generally on labor issues, that Democrat was better. He wasn't great, but he was better than the Republican. But on character issues, and just in a general way, I would say that the Republican was better in that particular race. We didn't endorse the Republican, obviously, and we didn't endorse the Democrat. We just left that one alone, and the Republican slaughtered the Democrat. The Democrat was terrible. But the point of this, of course, is that you've just got to be careful with some of these Democrats. You meet just terrible ones. I'm meeting terrible ones right now who think they can ride into office just based on what they think is going to be, and they're probably right, a landslide against Trump. So there's likely to be a landslide against Trump. I was looking at the newest numbers that came out today.
The new Quinnipiac
poll? Paul Ryan's district, 51% of the voters just in Wisconsin won, just in Ryan's district, 51% of the voters there have told pollsters this week that they would vote against Paul Ryan. They think
wow.
It's time to get rid of him and get a Democrat in there.
Wow. Now, that's huge, because last week, I believe it was last week we were talking, and it looks like Paul Ryan has a good challenger, yes?
It looks like it's a possibility that he's going to have a good challenger. The guy hasn't made a decision yet. Part of the reason, there are a lot of Democrats in that district in legislative seats, state senators, state mm-hmm. legislators. It's a pretty 50-50 district. So there are parts of that district that are true blue. I've talked to all of them. And the reason nobody wants to run is because the Democratic Party, the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, has stabbed every Democrat who's run against Ryan in the back. They'll typically say, you know, they'll badmouth them. They'll tell Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and whoever is running the DCCC from year to year, will call unions up and call up institutional Democratic donors and say, do not give money. We are not supporting this candidate. Do not give. And when Rob Zurbon, you know, when he ran, yeah, and the Democrats said, well, you know, if you raise $250,000, we'll talk to you about helping you. And then he raised $500,000, double what they asked. And then they said, oh, well, you have to raise $1 million. And then he raised $2 million. And they still never helped him. All they did was it's not even a matter of being neutral. They weren't neutral. They would go in with their horrible, ugly whispering campaigns, telling people not to help. That's what they are. That's what the DCCC is. A guy like Rob Zurbon, who could have beaten Paul Ryan, they did not want him in Congress. They don't want progressives. They want lackeys who will just let them make all the decisions. It's a nightmare for them to have someone like Alan Grayson in Congress,
yeah,
who has a mind of his own and an independent spirit and who's there to serve policy. Alan Grayson was always about the working families. He comes from a working family. That's who he is. That's why he's in Congress. It's a nightmare for them to have someone who's got that kind of mindset, someone who's about policy, someone who wants to make things happen. They don't want that. They want people to sit and not say anything and not do anything except what they tell them to do. And the Republicans are the same way, by the way. This is the way the establishment is. The Republican leadership want like a whole backbench just repeating the talking points, and that's all they want. In their mind, they just want people who will just follow Paul Ryan,
yeah,
and McCarthy and not interfere. And the Democrats are the same way. They don't want anybody. It freaks them out when there's someone like Pramila Jayapal who's got real ideas,
right,
based on principles and values.
What about Ted Lieu? How are they putting up with Ted Lieu? Because he's been wonderful. If you're not following Ted Lieu on Twitter, you need to do so right now, because he's just in their face. And he's been great,
right,
and he's got even got a
something about Ted Lieu. People are just discovering Ted Lieu. Of course, Blue America supported him from when he was still a state legislator,
right,
in California. But Ted Lieu, people are, you know, I on some of these these online lists that I'm on, suddenly people are saying, "Oh my God, have anybody ever heard of this guy Ted Lieu? He's amazing." And I'm laughing. Yeah, we've been,
yeah,
talking about him for several years now. But you've got to remember, people are getting crazy about Ted Lieu because he's one of the most effective anti-Trump guys.
Right.
But Ted Lieu is far more than just that. Ted Lieu, when he was in the California legislature, he was introducing bills that the federal government didn't even think would be possible. Anti-bankruptcy bills, for example, and bills to save people from banksters. I mean, Ted was so effective in the state legislature that the banksters came to the leaders of the legislature and bribed them to get Ted out of the committee chairmanship of the House Banking Committee, the Assembly Banking Committee. I mean, Ted is one of the truly, like Grayson, one of the truly great legislators. So even though he's making a name for himself now as an anti-Trump guy,
mm-hmm,
that's just scratching the surface,
right,
of what Ted. You know, recently, just I think last week, I put up a poll because Dianne Feinstein has been telling people she's not going to run again. She's been encouraging a pretty conservative Democrat, Adam Schiff, to run instead. And she told him that she's not going to run, that he should get ready to run himself. So I put up a poll with four people who are likely to be running, Adam Schiff and Loretta Sanchez, another blue dog, and Steyer, Tom Steyer, the environmentalist,
oh,
a very
uh-huh.
wealthy environmentalist who's a billionaire,
yes,
and can self-fund.
Right.
And Ted Lieu. So I put those four up on a Twitter poll, and Ted, and I said, who would you rather see run? And I had a huge response from it, like hundreds and hundreds of people, which is a lot from when I put up a Twitter poll. It's usually not that many people participate. And Ted won 71% of the four.
And that's
71%.
That's surprising, because Adam Schiff has been so in the spotlight because he's doing a great job on the House Intelligence Committee, or at least he was before Devin Nunes sort of crashed the whole thing.
Well, you know, you got anything that he's doing is what he's being told to do by Pelosi.
Oh, really?
She's really calling every shot.
Wow.
I mean, members of Congress have told me that she tells him word for word what he's supposed to say.
Seriously?
I don't know if that's true or not.
Wow.
But literally, members of Congress are telling me that it's every word is coming directly from Pelosi's office.
Wow. Howie Klein.
Well, I mean, I've known Adam for many, many years, since he was a state senator here, so a long, long time ago. And you know, he's not a bad guy necessarily, but he's a conservative Democrat. He used to be a blue dog. When his district, you know, changed drastically from a kind of a swingy type district to a deep, deep, deep blue district, he decided he wasn't going to be a blue dog anymore, so he became a new Dem.
Oh.
He's one of the least terrible of the new Dems,
right?
But he's still a new Dem. I mean, you know, why not? California deserves to have progressives, real progressives.
You're right.
Who have ideas and who are going to lead the way and are going to be part of the cutting edge of leadership. And that's why I'm so excited about the idea of now getting to work trying to somehow persuade Ted Lieu that he should do this. I don't know that Ted wants to do it or not, but there are certainly a lot of people who want him to do it. People in his district react poorly because
they don't want to lose him. Right. And that's the thing. I don't want to lose him from the House. Look, we lost Alan Grayson. Any chance Alan's going to run for the House again?
Oh, I think there is a chance. I don't think it'll be this year, although I don't know. But I think the last time I spoke with Alan about it, he said he had more than one book that he's working on, at least in his head. He wants to publish more than one book, and he would like to do that before he runs for office again. Now he could change his mind, or he could do it real fast. But he seems to be pretty busy right now. He's been doing some traveling, but he's serious about getting this stuff done. Plus he's got a lot of kids. I mean, I don't remember how many.
I thought it was like five. Yeah. Yeah.
And they, you know, they range in, you know, one of the oldest is in college. And then he's got like some real young kids, like really, really young kids. And he just feels like all of this public service that he's been involved with has not allowed him to be as much in the lives of his kids as he wants to be. So he's enjoying the idea right now of being with those kids, and which is what he's doing right now. So between writing his book and being with his kids, I would expect that we're not going to see him running this year. Next cycle.
Have you heard anything about Tim Canova going up against Debbie Wasserman Schultz again?
Tim is in.
He's in already.
Candidate.
Awesome. I'll have to give him a call.
So he is running. Blue America has re-endorsed him. We're collecting money for him on our Act Blue page, and Tim is in there fighting a good fight. I mean, that's what I meant about, you know, not all Democrats are good. I mean, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has helped to ruin the Democratic Party brand.
Mm-hmm.
When the Democrats go up and fight Republicans, people, especially independents, who are a third of the population, look at them and they look at her. And they say, why should we vote for you when this is what you pick as your leader?
Right.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Right. And that's why I still have a problem with the Democratic Party, because they seem to have learned nothing from 2016. But, you know, we fight on. So you've got a piece up at Down with Tyranny, Howie Klein. Anyone think Putingate and Comey's firing might be an issue in the 2018 midterms? Without a doubt. Now, just a few minutes ago, before I brought you on, I played a clip from Maggie Haberman at the New York Times, and she was talking about how most Republicans that are in office now are still not calling for an independent prosecutor. She said the only one who's really come out and is calling for some kind of other investigator is, what's his name? The guy who's already said he's, I'm sorry?
There are actually five who
right.
are.
Right. There are more that you have in your piece. The guy from...
Well, there are five in the House right now. First of all, Eric Swalwell, who's a Democrat from California, actually introduced legislation which almost, I think, either every Democrat in the House has signed on as a co-sponsor or almost every Democrat. I mean, this is like part of the Democratic Party right now. Everyone wants this independent investigation. So the first Republican to sign on to Eric Swalwell's legislation is a conservative but honorable Republican from North Carolina named Walter Jones. Mm-hmm. So Walter Jones is not some liberal or some moderate.
Nope.
He's a real conservative. He's not an asshole. He's not a racist. He's a principled guy, but he is a conservative. He's very anti-choice, for example. But he signed this bill. So he was the first one. Then Justin Amash, and remember something about Walter Jones, his district overwhelmingly voted for Trump. This is not some, swingy district. And there's a reason I'm saying that now, and I'll get to that in a second. Then the second one who came along and said he wants an independent investigation is Justin Amash in Michigan.
Right.
Again, he's from his district isn't as red, but Trump won that district and it wasn't close. And it's a Republican district. And he's another one. He's a principled guy. He's a conservative, but he's got principles and he's a patriot. And he feels that we have to have an independent investigation of Trump. Now, in case anyone who's listening to this doesn't understand what that means, when you say an independent investigation, that means that it's an investigation that Jeff Sessions can't influence,
mm-hmm.
that Ryan can't influence, that Mitch McConnell can't influence. It's an independent investigation that will lead to Trump being impeached. So when you talk about an independent investigation, that's shorthand for getting down the road towards impeachment, because that's the only place it can lead. So you have to remember that when they're saying this, they're saying something that Trump is going to remember, and he's a very vengeful person. And
yeah.
When a Republican in a deep red district, Trump district, says that they want an independent investigation, they get marked down in Trump's book as someone for him to get even with at some point. So the other three Republicans Republicans that came along and said that they're in favor of these independent investigations. One of them is Carlos Curbelo in Miami Beach.
Which is a shocker.
Now, his district went for Hillary Clinton by like a landslide. I think it was like over 15 points. I don't have the numbers right in front of me right this second, but it wasn't like, 45-55. It was much bigger than that. That is a blue district. He is in real jeopardy. So then you can say, well, okay, I mean, is he doing this because he really believes in it, or is he doing it to save his ass? And it's the same with the other two Republicans. So now there are five Republicans in the House who are absolutely calling for an independent investigation, meaning, hey, if he's guilty, let him be impeached. Now, the impeachment of Trump isn't going to happen until after 2018.
Good.
In 2018, if the Democrats win, if the Democrats win in 2018, then they start in 2019, you will assume that they will impeach Trump. Whether Trump is found guilty and removed from office, that's going to have to do with what happens in the Senate.
The Senate, right.
And again, I don't expect that we're going to have people like Lindsey Graham and John McCain willing to vote against him. I don't feel that they're going to do it. So we really have to beat at least three Republicans in the Senate races. And that's going to be really tough. Plus, we have to hold on to the Democratic seats that are there now. It's going to be I think that the Democrats can take back the House.
Yep.
Whether they can win the Senate is a much, much, much tougher prospect. It's not a good It's not a good setup for 2018.
No, the map favors the Republicans in the Senate.
Yeah.
But the Democrats only need 24 seats in the House, so it is doable. And all that, like the new polling that you mentioned earlier, the new Quinnipiac poll, all the new polling that's out, is looking like there's a wave coming. Now, here's the thing. It's still 18 months away, but we're talking about who's running and who's not and who's in it, because the House is always in campaign mode, right? Because they're all up every 2 years. So it can flip.
It can flip. And you know, when you say it's 18 months away, that's true. But that's a good thing, because it's getting better and better for the Democrats. So in other words, if the Democrats are up by 5 points or by 10 points, or right now by 16 points, by the time Trump is finished, 18 months from now, they could be up by 25 points. I mean, it's amazing how terrible he is. I mean, all of these new polls that came out were all that show the Democrats way ahead.
Yeah.
They were all taken before he fired Comey.
Yes.
Imagine what they look like today.
Right. So this
imagine
isn't even part of it.
Polls look like.
Yeah. And so we'll see that in the next couple of weeks.
Right. I mean, Ryan today, if the election were held today, he would lose his seat. That happened before Paul Ryan came out and said, no, we don't need a special prosecutor. Everything is fine.
It's amazing.
I have a feeling that the people in his district aren't going to like hearing that. And that's going to change the numbers even further against him. So, you know, when people say, yeah, it's a long way off. Yes, it's a long way off. More, that means that it's better, the wave will build even higher. I'm sitting and writing right now, when you called me just this minute, I was just writing about the most conservative and the most Trump-oriented district in West Virginia, the 3rd District, which is West Virginia's 3rd District, is the southern part of West Virginia. It's where it was Trump's biggest district in the state. Of the three districts, it was the one that he won with the most. I don't know, it was like 70% or 70-something percent. That was homeland for Trump. The Republicans may lose that congressional district. That's how bad things are right now. I'm not predicting that they're going to lose it,
right,
but I'm predicting that it could be a real race. If, and this is a big if, the Democrats get a good candidate. That's the problem. Now, Bernie Sanders and Trump never faced each other. However, they were both on the ballot on the same day. And I looked at there were 18 counties in that district. Trump won some of the counties. Bernie won some of the counties. No, that's putting it wrong. Bernie won every county in the district against Hillary. He wasn't running against Trump. He was running against Hillary.
Right.
But in many of those counties, he got more votes than Trump did.
Wow.
So when you have an imaginary face-off between Trump and Bernie, very, very, very close. Less than, even though there were 85,000 people that voted that day in that district, They were separated by 700 votes between Bernie and Trump. And now a lot of people think, hey, what happened to my Medicaid? Well, I got family that's going to die. So I'm thinking that, that's going to be a district where if the Democrats do the right thing. Now, Hillary did terrible in that district, both in the primary and in the general. She got wiped out. I mean, she didn't even get 30%. So if they nominate another piece of shit Democrat like that, then they have no chance, no chance at all. But if they nominate a populist who has a message about how to help working families, someone with a message like Bernie's, that's already proven. That's why Bernie won. He beat her in every single county.
Wow.
She didn't win one county, 18 counties. He won every one of them. She won none of them. There's a reason. But the DCCC doesn't want to listen to that. They want to bring in some asshole who will have no chance to win, and they know it. The only chance he'll have to win is if the tsunami is so big that it goes over the mountains of West Virginia.
Right.
That's the only, and they don't care, because they'd rather have someone like that than have some independent-minded progressive populist coming in with all these wild ideas like universal health care or Medicare for all.
What a concept.
I mean, they don't. If you look and see who signed on. I mean, most Democrats in Congress, 108 Democrats, as at the last time I looked, had signed on to John Conyers' Medicare for All bill. So that's most of the Democrats. But when you look at who didn't sign on, it's Blue Dogs, the New Dems, the head of the DCCC, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Joe Crowley. So all the leaders of the Democratic Party, plus the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, the New Dems and the Blue Dogs, they none of them signed on to this Medicare for All. But the rank-and-file Democrats in Congress, the people that we're talking about, like Ted Lieu, for example, they all signed on. They're all co-sponsors of Medicare for All. But the leaders of the Democratic Party, the head of the DCCC, they don't want that.
And that's the problem. And that's why
that is the problem.
That's
exactly
the problem. That's it. And that's why Blue America is so important in the work you do, Howie Klein. And with that, we've reached the end of the hour. It goes by so quickly.
We didn't already
started. I know, right? Well, you're welcome.
Did we go through a half hour already?
We did.
Oh my God.
Time flies, and I know.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So we'll pick up again next week.
We get to eat lunch now.
All right. Howie Klein. Find him again at Down With Tyranny on Twitter, and downwithtyranny.com is the website, the blog, and, of course, the Blue America PAC, which is where you find all the progressive candidates. Thank you so much, Howie.
Thanks, Nicole. Talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. With that, we're done for today. We'll pick up again tomorrow. Same time, same place. I'll leave you with Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen, and the Green News Report. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
It's Thursday, May 11, 2017.
He will not be making an announcement regarding that agreement until after he returns from the G7.
Temporary reprieve for the planet. Trump postpones decision on Paris climate agreement.
If the wind were to pick up, that could circulate air down in that tunnel and release radioactive particles into the air.
Emergency declared at the most contaminated nuclear site in the nation. Majority of toxic Superfund sites located near low-income areas, plus a win for taxpayers and the climate as Republicans fail to repeal methane flaring rule.
All of those happy failures and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Comedians, what are some shows we might hear on Redneck NPR? Guy Branum.
Wait, don't tell me about climate change.
Points, very good.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, another startling reminder this week that, there is a downside to nuclear energy.
Yes, there is. The Department of Energy declared an emergency on Tuesday at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State. That's 150 miles or so from Seattle, after a section of a sealed tunnel caved in that contained rail cars contaminated with nuclear waste. Officials say no radiation was released and no workers were injured or exposed at the Federal Superfund site, which for decades manufactured plutonium for nuclear weapons. In an interview with local news, Tom Carpenter of watchdog group Hanford Challenge said the incident again raises concerns over the safety of the decades-long cleanup effort.
This is absolutely a huge warning to Hanford, to the federal officials who oversee that site, and to the state of Washington. There are bad things at Hanford that could blow up, that could contaminate the communities, be a three-state disaster.
And speaking of Superfund sites, there are about 1,400 abandoned contaminated sites in the United States that are so polluted and so toxic that the federal government has assumed the cost and responsibility for cleaning them up. According to a new analysis from the Environmental Protection Agency, 70% of the country's most contaminated Superfund sites are located within a mile of low-income family housing. Mm. Bad news for marine life. Oxygen levels in the ocean are falling 2 to 3 times faster than predicted due to man-made global warming. Because warmer water can't hold as much dissolved oxygen as colder water, scientists predicted years ago that as oceans warm, the amount of oxygen in the oceans would drop, causing dead zones where marine life can't survive. Based on decades of ocean data, researchers at Georgia Tech conclude that dissolved oxygen in the ocean started dropping in the 1980s, and appears to be unfolding about 2 to 3 times faster than previously predicted.
Well, that's not good.
No, it's not.
But at least they're not living inside a nuclear waste dump, so there's that, right?
Yeah. Meanwhile, the White House announced on Tuesday that President Trump will delay, again, a decision about whether to withdraw the United States from the historic United Nations Paris Climate Agreement signed by President Obama. On Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said Trump will wait until after the G7 meeting in late May to decide.
The president wants to continue to meet with his team. Meet with not just the economic piece, but his environmental team, and come to a decision on what's the best interest of the United States using the expertise that surrounds him.
And by expertise, of course, he means lobbyists, corporations, and fossil fuel interests, I suppose.
Yes, he does. And those industry trade groups are heavily lobbying Trump to withdraw. But major American corporations like Google and major investors that control trillions of dollars in assets are urging Trump to remain in the accord. UN Environment Chief Eric Solheim warned Trump last week that the U.S. will lose jobs if it pulls out because China, India, and Europe will snap up the best power sector jobs in the future.
And even some companies like Exxon, yes, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's old company Exxon, are encouraging him to stay in the agreement so that the U.S. has a seat at the table. Otherwise, the world is going to leave the U.S. behind.
Finally, some good news with a win for American taxpayers. Senate Republicans on Wednesday failed in their attempt to repeal an Obama-era regulation requiring the oil and gas industry to stop leaks and the flaring of harmful methane, a potent greenhouse gas, from their operations on public lands. The industry lobbied heavily for repeal, but environmental groups said the rule was crucial to stop the industry from wasting the public's natural gas, costing taxpayers more than $300 million a year in lost royalties. That's enough to power about 5 million homes. Three Republican senators joined Democrats in narrowly defeating the repeal.
And who were those Senate Republicans?
John McCain of Arizona.
What?
Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
His buddy.
And Susan Collins of Maine.
Well, good for them. Glad they did the right thing. For the moment. For one single vote. But I'll take it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide via the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I think I got it right this time.